Hello and welcome to At the Movies with Mike and Marie, a show where two film professors talk about movies. I'm Marie Westhaver.
I'm Mike Giuliano.
And today we're going to talk about West Side Story, both the original and the remake. Mike, where do we start? Because this is just such an iconic film that so many people are familiar with. Let's set the stage for, so to speak, for the discussion.
Well, it's an iconic film or films based on an iconic Broadway musical. And the Broadway musical debuted in 1957, and it's really striking on several scores. One of them, of course, is the score itself. Leonard Bernstein's score is absolutely terrific. It's such a great musical score. I hear it in my head as I'm speaking right now. It's just, you know, one of the all-time great scores. So any film that uses it, you know, has that to its advantage. But going back to the Broadway show in 57, it had that great Bernstein music. And of course, I should point out that the lyrics are by Stephen Sondheim, who's beginning his career at that point. You have Arthur Lawrence working on the book. You've got Jerome Robbins, working on the choreography. It's just, you know, a great, great lineup of Broadway talent. And so certainly at the artistic level, the aesthetic level, it's such a landmark Broadway musical. But a second level on which it really scores or registers has to do with the subject matter, which certainly for the time would have been bold, would have been unusual. And I'll point out that we have this white bread image of the 1950s, a kind of Ozzie and Harriet notion. And there's enough truth to that. And maybe because of that truth, actually, people in that decade were really worried about juvenile delinquency. They really felt that there was something. And this was the era of the teenager, right, coming on the scene. And we had suddenly, you no longer just went from childhood to adulthood. You had this protracted period of the teen years, which could be trouble in all sorts of ways beyond acne. And so when you think about what's going on in that decade, think about it from a Hollywood perspective. There have been movies like Rebel Without a Cause and Blackboard Jungle and any number of B pictures, drive-in movie features that would deal with troubled teens. So it's not at all surprising that our creative team for West Side Story took that on as subject matter. And so they tried to figure out like how to deal with this in terms of rival gangs. And it's really a fascinating process. Initially, and this is not well known, but initially they had the story set on the Lower East Side, and there was going to be a conflict between an Italian gang and a Jewish gang. And they actually did have a working title. We're going back to the mid-1950s. They had a working title of East Side Story. And then they retooled it, and it went to the Upper West Side, and it became essentially, you know, the Puerto Rican gang that we tend to immediately think of in West Side Story, but essentially a white, quote unquote, white American gang and a Puerto Rican gang. And that's the West Side Story that we know. And so then when the musical opened, it had that topical advantage of dealing with troubled teens. Now the teens in the Broadway version, they did get into trouble, but a lot of it was at the level of knocking over trash cans and having a rumble and so on. You know, some serious stuff, but not like too, too serious. And we'll talk presently about differences in the material as the show gets revamped and then the second film version comes out. So going back, though, to that initial period, you really do have a sense of a great creative team, a really topical subject matter in terms of troubled teens, and marrying that, aligning that with, of course, a retelling of Romeo and Juliet. And that really was a really fascinating process to take the Shakespearean material, bring it into the 50s, bring it into those topical issues. And you know what? Sometimes magic happens. It all just melded. It all came together beautifully. And over the years, people have periodically retooled the musical in various ways. And as Marie and I will be talking about, we have two film versions of it that, you know, have the same essential story, but there are some key differences, I would say, between the 1961 film version and the Steven Spielberg version that's in theaters and you know, people are viewing right now. But with that as a lengthy prologue, let me turn it back over to Marie.
Well, Mike, I want to ask, because, you know, some people have said with the new version that came out, why did we need to remake a classic like West Side Story? And I can only guess that when the first movie came out in 61, they may have had the same complaints about, well, why would you need to take this perfectly wonderful stage production and make a movie out of it? Was that a controversy at the time?
Well, you know, Marie, my real take on that is I've seen West Side Story on stage a number of times, you know, touring Broadway revivals and community theaters and school theaters, you name it. It's a show that's done so often. And the question does not come up with live theater. In other words, you know, it goes beyond the issue of asking, well, why do West Side Story again? Well, it's a great stage musical, let's do it again. But to your core question, in doing it again, of course you rethink it, you know, and this starts in a fundamental way with the casting of it, with the emphasis you put on certain characters, with the gang rumbles, if you will, how you're going to stage them, and, you know, thematically what you're going to do with that. So really, when you come down to it, fundamentally, every time a new stage version is done, some of these questions will come up as to how to treat the material. So by way of, you know, when I say update, I don't just necessarily mean chronologically kicking it ahead, because it's almost always done as a period piece. It's meant to be in the mid to late 50s. But because that's the case with live theater, I don't see why it can't be the case with what I'll call film theater, you know, to have a movie version of it. Even though I'm generally not in favor of, this is one of my hobby horses, I'm generally not in favor of sequels and remakes and all that, and that's a whole rant for another occasion. But in the case of something like an iconic Broadway musical that's done as a film, I don't have any inherent problems with taking that and saying, well, let's make a new movie version and see how we want to treat the material. Because in my mind, aesthetically, I think of it essentially the same as I would think about saying, okay, we had it on stage the other year, let's do it on stage again, let's see how we want to work with the material. So what do you think of that? Because I think actually from a creative perspective, you're still going back to that essential 1957 musical and deciding what you want to do with it.
But, you know, the interesting thing about the going from stage to screen is I agree with you. I think, you know, you always want to go back to the original source, even just for comparisons. And the 61 West Side Story, I think, is very stagey. You can tell that it's a play. And I would, you know, not to jump ahead too quickly, but the newer version feels much less like a play that has been photographed well, which just gives it a different feeling. But I think that was intentional probably at the time, just to give people who didn't normally go to the theater a chance to see it like it would be seen on stage. And of course, what makes the movie shine, what makes the play shine, is the incredible music, as you pointed out, and the choreography, the dancing. You know, when you think of West Side Story, the first thing that comes to my mind is the Jets doing their dancing in the street. And it's exhilarating, even though it's supposed to, you know, embody juvenile delinquency and all those kinds of negative things. It's fabulous. It's wonderful to watch. And I have some interesting stats here that people might also be interested in, that their jeans were dyed and re-dyed and distressed using special elastic thread to allow for the severity of the choreography. And also during the entire production, the actors wore out 200 pairs of shoes, applied more than 100 pounds of makeup, and split 27 pairs of pants, performed in 30 different recording sessions. So, I mean, that is some exertion right there when you wear out that much stuff.
Well, Maria, I want to pick up on some of the points you're making about the 1961 film version. It needs to be pointed out that that film, directed by Robert Wise, won 10 Academy Awards, including Best Picture and Best Director. It was actually co-directed by Wise and Jerome Robbins. I actually met Robert Wise once, and although I think he had an uneven career as a film director, there are some notable credits there. The thing that amazed me in talking with him was to remember, to realize he was the editor on Citizen Kane. So he goes back to the, you know, early 1940s at RKO. As a film director, his filmography, again, I think is uneven, but there's some major films along the way. Certainly in science fiction, The Day the Earth Stood Still in 1951, a lot of science fiction, like Star Trek in 79. I mean, he did some sci-fi films, but he was versatile. He also did not just this musical, but The Sound of Music in 1965. So, you know, he has his credits there. But essentially, to one of your most important points, there is a deliberate staginess to the 1961 film version. And that, on the one hand, it doesn't bother me because I think, well, you know, you had this great Broadway musical, and now here's a film version of it, you know, captured on film. I mean, there's some location shooting and, you know, some attempt to open it up, but not a whole lot. And so that doesn't bother me too much. But on the other hand, it does bother me a little because there are places where this 61 version is kind of static, kind of stodgy film theater thing. And then I go back and forth on it thinking, okay, on the one hand, on the other hand. But I got to say, the 61 version, again, in terms of my having very mixed feelings about it, it is better than the Spielberg version, I think, in terms of the dancing. The choreography in the 61 version was done by the guy who originated it, Jerome Robbins. It's very sharp choreography. It works beautifully. And if it seems stagey, well, it should be. It's on a sound stage, you know? It should look that way. Whereas the choreography in the Spielberg remake is by Justin Peck, who's certainly got great credentials. And it's okay. It's fine. But I would give the edge on points to the 61 film for the dancing, for the choreography. So that's one of the strengths of the 61 version, which I'm not crazy about overall, but that's one of its strengths. The greatest demerit of the 61 version is a crucial one. It almost sinks the film, I think. Namely that Richard Beamer and Natalie Wood, the two leads, are Tony and Maria, they're flat, they're mediocre. It's not just an issue that both actors are dubbed, including, of course, Marnie Nixon. And I interviewed Marnie Nixon once and I asked her about this, the fact that, you know, that's not Natalie Wood singing. I mean, these voices are dubbed in. It's just simply that the chemistry is not fully there. The actors are okay, but not more than okay. And I think that nearly sinks the 61 version. I've got some of the same reservations actually about the principal roles or some of them in the remake, but we'll get to that. So what I'm getting at essentially is the 61 version did very well critically, commercially, 10 Oscars, as I say. And yet I think aesthetically, to Marie's point, there's a static quality to it. Whereas jumping ahead as Marie did, Spielberg is much more inventive with camera work and editing and just a sense of mobility. And the remake, again, jumping ahead, is more grounded in the neighborhood. And we'll get around to that in a more detailed way. But to cut to the chase very quickly, and then I'll turn it back to you, push come to shove, people will ask, well, which is better? And I'll give a sort of out of both sides response of, I have mixed feelings about both the 1961 version and the 2021 version, but push come to shove, I think that the Spielberg film is more accomplished as a film.
I agree with you on that. I do want to pose a question to you in terms of, I went ahead and watched the 61 version right before I went to go see the remake. And I was glad that I did because I didn't try not to read anything about the new version, just to kind of go into it cold. But going in, I thought, you know, I at least hope they keep all of the songs because, you know all the words to all of the songs, whether you made a point of trying to learn them or not. They're just so popular and they've just been part of American culture for so very long. And they do keep all the songs. You know, you get Officer Krupke, you get, you know, the Jess, you get the Maria song, you get I Feel Pretty, all of those moments that you're waiting for in the movie happen. So to your point about the choreography, why change the choreography? Except for the fact that, of course, the sets are slightly different, which means you might need to block things differently. Why not keep all the original choreography? So I'll give a chance to respond to that. And then I have another, I think the critical problem with this movie is something else. So, but what about the choreography, Mike? Why change it?
Okay, I actually asked myself the same question. And ironically, you sort of answered your own question here. Here's why, Mary. When you think about it, because the Robert Wise version from 1961 is essentially, there's some location work, I know, but it's essentially a stage approach. It's framing the action, you know, the invisible proscenium arch, if you will. And Jerome Robbins' choreography was done with that in mind. I mean, that you're working on a stage, you're projecting out to the audience. It's a relatively stationary camera, much as a viewer would be in the audience, right? And so the choreography is done with that in mind. With Spielberg, it's a different equation. And, you know, I've met Spielberg a couple times over the years, and I admire him on all sorts of levels, including the technical level. He knows what to do with a camera. And in his version of West Side Story, as we said earlier, there's a lot of mobile camera work. There's a lot of inventiveness with the staging. And crucially, in the Spielberg version, there is even more location work. Even if there are some, you know, constructed or semi-constructed sets, you have a sense of real streets. For those reasons, you could not do the Jerome Robbins choreography straight. You would have to alter it somewhat. And so on the one hand, I would love to keep all the Robbins choreography. On the other hand, pragmatically speaking, once you start to alter the placement of a foot, and this is back to what you said about blocking, Marie, once you start to do that, the whole process has to be rethought. You have to really think, well, wait a minute, you can't do it straight on here because the camera is somewhere else, et cetera. And once you start down that path, you might as well, in the case of Justin Peck, he's a respected choreographer, you might as well get somebody else to take the original choreography and retool it or rethink it. My main complaint with the retooled choreography is it works and it's often exciting. However, it's much looser, it's much slacker than the Robbins choreography. Now, in its favor, you could say, well, we're out on the street with real, quote unquote, people, and they're moving in a more organic, natural way. But on the other hand, I would argue back, yeah, you know what? But the tightness, the sharpness of the Robbins choreography is so impressive. And I felt like the dancers hit their marks more exactly in the first film version than in the second. And maybe in the second, they weren't even trying to hit the marks as much. They were being more natural about it. But you know what? Push come to shove again. This is a Broadway musical. There's going to be artifice, right? It's not quote unquote real life. It's a very stylized take on it. And this is something we can talk about some more. This sometimes awkward merger or fusion of real locations and Broadway artifice. And there's a whole lot I'd love to say about that, but rather than go on for hours, I'll turn it back over to you.
Now for the 61 version, they did for the studio shots, they built up a stage so that they could place the camera down low. So, you know, just in terms of that technique, that would be very difficult to do out on the street. I mean, how would you even accomplish the same thing? So you make a good point. What I think makes the movie, when you watch it now, the 61 version, what stands out to me is how bad that makeup is. That they wanted to make up everybody, even the Puerto Rican actresses like Rita Moreno, everyone's wearing makeup and it looks terrible. It looks, as she says, it was like putting mud on her face and that it streaked and ran. And I don't think the makeup looks effective on any of the characters. And if you watch the 61 version, this will stand out to you big time.
That is such an important observation. We need to talk about casting politics, conventions, if you will, both in the Broadway theater and in Hollywood at that time. Here you have a musical with not just Puerto Ricans, but you know, various ethnicities represented or referenced. And yet in casting for Broadway and for the 1961 film version, what do you typically get? Well, you get white actors. And so they put makeup. It amounts to a kind of blackface, doesn't it? Or call it brownface, whatever, you know, designation you want to put there. And in the 61 film version, it's really noticeable. It's really kind of irksome, actually, to see that on all sorts of, you know, not just political levels, but just at the level of credibility, right? That, you know, in terms of who looks convincing. So one thing that has to immediately be said is one of the highlights of the 61 version, of course, is Rita Moreno as Anita. Anita is such a great character. And then you get the perfect actor to play it. And of course, you know, Rita Moreno would win the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress there. But immediately to your point, Marie, she's just about the only Latinx performer in the show. I mean, the 1961 film version. It's almost all white actors who are, you know, in makeup. And ironically, and Marie and I, some months ago on this program, talked about a documentary about Rita Moreno. And she's discussed this, that what irritated her so much was some of the people on the creative team felt that she didn't look sufficiently Puerto Rican. And you know, she could say, well, this is my heritage. It's, well, they had this notion, the sense that she should be darker. And so, you know, it's like funny and not funny the way that, you know, even somebody who's the real thing, genuine, she didn't look genuine to them, right? And so almost everyone in the cast then had to, you know, get some stage makeup that way. Now, on a very practical level, I mean, we can talk about in terms of what's correct and not correct in terms of representation, but on a very practical level, if you're on a Broadway stage and you're a white actor and they put you in that kind of darker makeup, depending on the distance from the audience and the lighting and so on, you can get away with it. And I just mean on a practical level, you can look more or less convincing. But you know what? The camera at close range is unforgiving. And this is Marie's point, that when you get like a close-up or medium close-up, it's like, if you start to focus on that as a viewer, it takes you away even from the great score. You just start thinking along those other lines there. So Marie, I think that's actually one of the liabilities of the 1961 film version, is that it's sometimes stagey in a good way, as in the Jerm Robbins choreography. And some of the stylization actually is impressive on its own level. But on the other hand, there are times where you think this is artifice that is not convincing. And we need to believe that these are genuine members of a gang having a rumble and so on. But if you feel like it's a young white actor pretending, making believe, there, you know, there's make believe and there's make believe. At some point, you need to have the audience, you know, adhere to and believe in what they're watching. But Marie's point again, if you keep thinking, what terrible makeup, boy, does that take you away from the story and the theme.
Well, I will say one of the joys of the remake is we get Rita Moreno back. She plays Valentina. She replaces the Doc character from the original. And it's just so lovely to have her back. I mean, she really, I think, carried the first movie. And seeing her in the newer version was just like, oh, it was just so nice to have her back. I feel like she still ran the movie. She was the most memorable, believable, and likable character. So in terms of talking about the 2021 version, Mike, what did you think of the acting? Not just Rita, but the two leads.
Well, let's actually first continue the discussion of Rita Moreno. She's 90 years old now. You know, when she won the Academy Award in 1961, it was such a big deal that, you know, that here you have, you know, Puerto Ricans on screen and with mixed results in terms of credibility, but, you know, she's the real deal, as they say, right? And she gives such a great performance as Anita. She is the best thing, hands down, the best thing in the 1961 film version. Well-deserved that Oscar. To me, on an emotional level, I was so moved by the fact that she is in the Spielberg remake. When he first approached her, she initially said no. And the reason she said no was she thought, well, if it's just a cameo, it will be distracting. And her point wasn't, it wasn't ego-driven, like, I want more time. It was just like, you know, if suddenly in the middle of the movie, I pop up for 30 seconds, the audience will go, oh, that's Rita Moreno. She doesn't look bad for 90, you know? And you know what I'm getting at? It's like, it would just be an audience distraction. But Spielberg assured her it was a fully scripted character. This is where we should talk about differences. The original, you know, book for the musical is Arthur Lawrence, but then, of course, Ernest Lehman did the script for the 19, and he's no slouch as a writer, did the script for the 61 film version. Tony Kushner, you know, the notable playwright, has worked with Spielberg a few times on Munich and Lincoln and so on, and Tony Kushner did the script for this current version. He made some changes in it. One of the main changes actually refers to the character that, you know, we've been talking about in terms of Rita Moreno. Again, in the original one, she wins the Oscar for playing Anita. In this current version, she plays a totally new character. Here's the genealogy on it. In the Broadway musical from 57, and then again in the 61 screen version, there's a minor character named Doc. And he runs a neighborhood store, a pharmacy. And you know, he's not all that important as a character, but he is there. In this current version, he has passed away. And this character, Valentina, the one played by Rita Moreno, is his widow. And you know what? One of the things I have very mixed feelings about Kushner's script, but one of the things I like a lot about it is she seems like a totally justified and valuable character to have in it. She's like the moral grounding in the Puerto Rican community. And it's partly at the level of scripting that she's not just popping up in an arbitrary way. No, characters visit her. She passes judgment. She's there. She gets to sing as well. You know, she's there in a really valuable way. Secondly, as I said earlier, I found it emotionally moving, even almost overwhelming that, my gosh, it's Rita Moreno. And it wasn't just like, here I am kind of a performance. It's like, no, she's really into that character. She was like, she gives just about the best performance in the film. She's really, really good in it. Also, Anita DeBose, who plays Anita, is terrific too. So those are like the two great performances. But back to the essence of your question, Ray, the ulterior motive. And the question is, how do I feel about the leads? Well, I got to tell you, in the Spielberg version, ironically, I have some of the same reservations as I did about the 61 version. In the 61 version, the Richard Beamer and Natalie Wood, they're weak as romantic leads, as Romeo and Juliet, if you will, and that really hurts it. In this remake, Rachel Zegler is okay. She's fine as Maria, no major problems there. I think she's convincing, she's good. The real problem is in the casting for Tony, because after all, Tony and Maria are, you know, Romeo and Juliet. Ansel Elgort, to put it politely, is a mediocre actor. He's not very good. Here's where it hurts in particular. In Tony Kushner's script, he has revamped the character of Tony in a few ways. One of them being in the Broadway musical and the 61 film version. Yeah, he runs with a gang and he's done some bad things, but like, you know, knocking over trash can kind of activity. In the Kushner script for the current version, he has been in prison for a serious assault. He's bad news in his background. He's trying to turn a new leaf. He's trying to reform and be better and get away from the gang life. And he has prison on his mind. He doesn't want to go back. That's a significant difference. It's so much more severe than in earlier versions of the story. Now, that's valid, I think, at the level of scripting to do it that way. I think Kushner's totally justified in doing that. The problem is that Ansel Elgort is just not a very good actor. So although it's in the script that he has this troubled past and actual violence, watching him on screen, I think, yeah, heartthrob and easy on the eyes and this and that. But I'm thinking, I find it hard to believe he could beat anybody up. I don't see him having served prison time. And he's just like reading the lines as an actor. I don't feel on a visceral level, this is what the character is. And where it absolutely nearly sinks the picture at times is when you have Tony and Maria in the Spielberg version, getting to know each other, instantly falling in love, all that. It works well enough, but not all that convincing. It just seems like it's kind of forced at times in terms of actors reading lines. Marie, what do you think on this? Because I think the greatest weakness of the Spielberg version is the two principal characters, the actors playing Tony and Maria. Again, I think Rachel Zegler's good, but Ansel Elgort, I think, is just a washout as Tony.
Okay, so I don't think there's any chemistry between these two actors, so it's really not very believable what goes on between them. But I didn't think Ansel Elgort was that bad. I thought what the benefit was of casting him specifically is I could not help but think about Baby Driver, just the last thing I saw him in, where, you know, this really nice guy gets caught up in a life of crime. And in the end, he ends up having to pay for his mistakes, et cetera, et cetera. But I was sort of carrying that over into this and seeing, well, he doesn't seem like a bad guy, but, you know, somehow he got sucked into a life of crime. So I was, you know, borrowing what I'd already seen him in, you know, to sort of pad out the motivation for his character. And that did kind of work for me. Also, I could not, while I was watching it, in my mind say, well, who would I cast instead? It's just a really difficult thing to cast, I think, both of those roles, which is why I think the Anita role is always like the most exciting one. If you're going to be in West Side Story, you want to be Anita. You don't want to be Maria. You know, Anita gets all the good lines and good scenes. So I think that may just be a function of the script. And also maybe that's a function of, if you're going to give people eye candy for the romantic leads, you know, a lot of times eye candy doesn't come with a lot of range. It's a trade-off of sorts. But before we run out of time, because we're down to like 3 minutes, one of the strengths of the Spielberg version, I think, Mike, is just the way he shoots it. It's exciting, especially that opening scene with the jets running through the streets of New York City. And it just looks so realistic. It almost looks like man on the street with the camera kind of thing, just capturing it. I just found it very immediate and it sucked me in right away, made me think this is going to be a really good movie.
Yeah, in terms of the man on the street or gangs on the street, if you will, the Spielberg version benefits from the location shooting. And in that respect, the fact that you have Puerto Rican or Latinx actors playing almost all the principal roles, the credibility of that, that really works well. And in that respect, a lot of Spanish dialogue. So it's really grounded that way in a way that the 1961 version is not particularly well grounded. However, even though I love the mobility of Spielberg's approach, there are some bumpy transitions as you go from dramatic scenes to musical scenes. It doesn't always flow as smoothly as it might. And this is Spielberg's first musical. On balance, I think he does a good job with it. And there's some really impressive sequences, but I think it's a little choppy along the way.
Any Academy Awards you think will come out of this? I'm sort of hoping against hope that Rita Moreno can get a second Best Supporting Actress.
But Marie, what happens if she goes up against Ariana DeBose as Anita, you know, for Best Supporting Actress? What a strange competition that would be. But joking aside, I really hope Rita Moreno gets nominated for this performance. I think the film's going to pick up a lot of nominations, certainly in technical categories, Best Picture, Best Director. Yeah, it's going to get a lot of nominations. And we'll see how it does. But it is a prestige release. And again, on balance, it gets most things right. And I think, you know, I didn't think it was a great film, but I certainly enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, I will agree with you on that one. That brings us to the end of this episode. Don't forget to check out our other episodes at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. And you can also find us under Dragon Digital Radio on Spotify and Pandora. And we will see you next time at the movies.
See you then.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.